We've had a very active off season, and we focused, as we stated, to really hone in on our current players and re-signing our own players. Jumped out in free agency on a couple guys, as you all know, and our focus has been strongly on the draft over the last it's over the last year, but we've really dialed in on where we are going into 11 picks. We're going to be active, and active can be up, down, or around, but we're definitely looking to continue to bolster this this roster. We believe there are still places in the roster that we can continue to build up in order to help us achieve that ultimate goal that we want here. So let's throw this out to questions.
Thomas, before we go into the draft stuff, can we get an update on the quarterback's extension situation?
There's no update on it.
All right, so we can go into the draft. Well, let's keep it moving. could you discuss your trade philosophy in the draft? You've traded in every single draft. There's reports.
Well, wait a minute. That wasn't really nice of me. I'm sorry. Look, seriously, the situation is, as we've mentioned, both parties, we're in a very comfortable situation, and we're focused on the draft again. After the draft, we'll continue to discuss, and I'm sure both parties, Matt, as well as the Falcons, are feeling good about making sure that this gets done at the right time. There's no time frame on it right now, and I don't want to keep you hanging on it, but I feel confident that things are going to be taken care of when the time is proper.
Thanks, sir. And as far as the every draft you've made a trade, rumors about the Falcons trading up this year, can you discuss your trading philosophy? You've moved up and down, high and low, in the middle. Mm-hmm. Can you sum up your philosophy when a deal is being made and comes to fruition that you believe can benefit the organization?
Mercurial. How about that?
Okay.
I truly believe that. I think it's very important for us to come into every draft with an open book, open to do business, as we've talked about. We'll never be flippant about it at all, honestly. I mean, I think it's very important to utilize your picks, whether it's 11 picks or whether it's 5 picks, where you think it's necessary to move up or down. And we've been very, very active. I think I got a text from you saying that you – coined me Trader Thomas. I don't know if that's the best. Not sure if that's the best name, but that's right. Well, we've been particular about that. We've been open about it. I think it's very clear that we are open for big deals as well. If they ever come across our table and something that we're interested in, I think from our move in for Julio, it's interestingly enough, I get calls. Well, since then, I've gotten calls every year. And we're always going to get calls, I believe, inquiring. Sometimes they're going to be outlandish calls, but that's all right, because I like the fact that people are open to giving us a ring on potential deals. So with that said, I have no specifics at all. We just want to make sure that we do the right thing for this organization. If we see someone that's necessary, to move back for and gain some picks, we'll do that as well as move up.
And you, throughout the draft, you've got some of your former lieutenants, some of your former bosses, right, in key positions if y'all do want to do something.
Yeah, I think it's very important to make sure you have those good relationships around the league. Again, the deal that we got done with Cleveland for Julio was important. I had a good working relationship with Tom Heckert at the time. I've had relationships with other people in the league to make sure that you solidify trades, and there's no duplicity in it at all. It's just a matter of making sure that you're in a really good spot to make sure you trust each other, and it can be a win-win for both parties. That's what ultimately you're looking for.
Thomas, is there any way of anticipating what somebody might do? Is there ever a scenario where you say, suppose they did this, or is that just conjecture?
I think it's conjecture, but I think we're always thinking about what could possibly happen. If you were to be in our office and see the different scenarios that we have. I mean, they're countless as far as what could come about, the players that could be there, what would precipitate us moving up considerably, what may precipitate us moving back 5, 6, 10 spots. there's just a lot going on, especially at 30. I like being at 30, quite honestly. I think it's a good spot to be in, especially this year. Either direction, I think it's an area as well. I think it will be an area that will have interest teams to move up toward who are in the second round and possibly looking for, you know, some of the potential quarterbacks that might be at the back end of the first round. So I think that's interesting as well.
Thomas, how important was it for Tony, for you to know that Tony was coming back, going in, making your plans for the draft?
It was very interesting for us to know that Tony was coming back. It doesn't change our approach. It's not. It doesn't mean that we won't continue to look at that position. I think that's we all know that. I mean, to have an opportunity to bring in tight ends at whatever level to work with Tony Gonzalez can be a major positive for an organization, you know, for the future. I think I'm glad that Tony was able to make sure that he was, you know, very clear about it before the draft, and quite honestly, during that free agency time, it sort of eased the situation a little bit and allowed us to be that much more creative going into this draft.
That draft chart table in terms of trading, it's been a constant, it seems, for a long time. Mm. How much of that actually will be flexible depending upon the actual talent of a specific draft? In other words, if it's 3,000 points for one, 1,000 points for 10, based upon the talent in the draft, does that number move a little bit? And how much is that chart actually gone by you guys?
You know, the chart's been around for quite a while, and there have been some adjustments and some offshoots of that chart. We're pretty consistent with how we approach it. You also have to factor in not only the strength of the draft, that is an important thing, but also, you know, you factor in what may be future picks as well, and how you discount, honestly, is from team to team. So, you know, it's not universal as far as the up and down and the devaluing or valuing of the chart. We definitely go by the chart as a guideline, but it's not something that's hard and fast, and that's the only way to move. I mean, when we did our big deal a couple years ago, you know, there are certain teams that valued it completely different than we did, and you know, ostensibly we paid way too much for it at that time, and you know, that's arguable, obviously, from team to team. Well, I think, you know, anytime you lose starters and talented football players, and we made some very difficult decisions this year, we knew we were going to have to. I mean, my focus has been on that a lot sooner than obviously making that move recently. You know, corner positions are always coveted in this league. We are always trying to find the ideal athlete, the person that can move well, the person that can jump, make plays on the ball, and that's not easy to find. So we're always in hunt. As a league, we're always in hunt to try to improve our depth at the corner position. But there are other positions like that as well. So I think, again, it's not like we're going into the draft, you know, just looking at, definitely not just looking at corner, or not looking at, you know, tight end or whatever other positions have been projected that we're going to be interested in. Again, there's some very good defensive players in this draft, and you know, we're confident that we can continue to build. Yeah, to have a full draft this year is good. It feels good. It feels solid. It feels like we're going in with leverage. Again, back to the creativity idea. We did what we did in free agency and re-signed people, as well as having 11 picks. It's a comforting feeling. At 30, again, the ability to move up and down is important for us. And, you know, again, I think I've said this publicly. I believe this is a draft that is not necessarily a wow factor draft. However, there are some very solid football players in this draft that, you know, a lot of teams will make themselves a lot better, not only in the first round, but in, you know, rounds 2, 3, 4 and on. So, again, as a staff, as a coaching staff, as a personnel staff, as team builders, we're really excited about going in this draft with 11. And, again, doesn't mean we'll come out with 11.
Is there a particular group that kind of throughout this entire process gotten a leg up on maybe the other position groups that are in this draft class?
A leg up as far as talent?
In terms of like just, yeah, talent, strength and numbers, stuff like that.
I think there are a lot, you know, again, defensively, I think this is a good defensive draft with a lot of numbers on, you know, along the defensive front. I think there are some good corners and safeties in this group. There are some very good offensive linemen in this draft as well. So this is a good solid depth draft. And again, you're not going to see people talking about the flashy picks in the top 5 to 10, but hence a lot of the discussion about teams looking to get out of the top 10. I'm not sure if there will be a lot of buyers in that situation. I think we discuss it a lot internally, and again, I think we've been very calculated about our decisions over the years. We think about, you know, not only the here and now. This is the great thing is that Mike Smith as a head coach has vision. We're very fortunate. The fan base is very fortunate. We are as an organization where you're not just stressing today and this season. So that's important for us, because when you think about considering, you know, potentially moving up or, you know, dealing picks, I think you have to be very mindful of the repercussions, and I think we are. I think we have some great discussion about it, and I'm in a really, really comfortable spot as far as understanding the value of picks, not only the value of 1 and 2, but the value of 4, 5, and 6. I think, and I would suggest most general managers and head coaches would say this, we arguably should know our teams better than anyone else, you know, as team builders, and I think it's very important for the general manager and the head coach to have a really good understanding of where we are as far as our talent, where we are in years to come as far as re-signing players, the strength of this draft compared to the strength of free agency. There are so many moving parts that play into something as simple as trading up or down 5, 10, or 15 spots in a round. So I think I like to refer to it as not as a puzzle. This is much more of a chess game in my mind, because a lot of the moves that we make aren't made just for the here and now. Again, they're made for the future. And sometimes the moves that we make aren't always going to strike, you know, the big hit. It may set up another big hit at another time in the chess match.
Based upon phone activity, maybe as a measurement, do you think there'll be anything done this week prior to draft night itself? Or do you think if there is a flurry, it's actually going to be done as it kicks off and really gets started?
Usually what happens, Chris, is you end up talking about it prior to, you know, right around now. There's a lot of discussion about the potential to move up or down, and you start trying to decide what might be the right compensation. You'll never have the exact compensation, excuse me, until you're either on the clock or until you decide on, you know, striking the deal. But you want to put your feelers out, or people put their feelers out, and, you know, see who might truly have an interest. You usually don't want to just go into the draft and start, you know, winging around trade ideas, especially significant ones. Usually those are discussed a lot sooner than draft day.
How do you feel about where you are right now at right tackle?
Right tackle, there's obviously, you know, we've made a change, and it was a difficult move again. One of the difficult moves we've made, Tyson Klebo was a very important part to this football team. And like the other difficult moves we've made, this was one that we felt was needed for, you know, the long-term future and signing of players and you know, the fiscal elements to this, you know, building of this roster. And they're not easy. Again, we have some young guys that we're excited about, you know, growing. We have some guys that have been around for 2, 3, and 4 years. I mean, Mike Johnson's back. Lamar Holmes is there to compete. We have other offensive linemen that we think can step up you know, work really hard. I think there's going to be a really, really fired up, competitive push to win that right tackle job as well. Look, we have 11 picks in this draft that would also play into, you know, what the future at the right side.
Anything else, guys?
Yes.
Ryan Banks and what that allows you to do for decision making, thought process, and all that.
I mean, that Brian Banks situation for us, again, this is a it's a great feel-good story. I understand that. He's an acquisition for us that we think can play into, you know, working out, try to land one of the six linebacker spots. I mean, this guy comes in again at 6'2" and a half. Was he 250? Runs in the low 4.8s, as I've mentioned. He has a nice understanding of the game for where he is after, you know, such a long time away from it. I think our team and our guys are you know, encouraged by what he's going to bring to the table. And you know, this is going to be it is a long journey for him, as we all know. But he's the type of guy that's going to put all of his, you know, heart and soul into making this football team, and he's got as much of a chance to make this team as anyone else. As I mentioned, we didn't just bring him in for the story. We brought him in because we think that there's potential there to continue to grow, and, you know, we'll see in time whether he, you know, solidifies a roster spot.
What does his makeup let you know he's prepared to do that, especially anything that he may be greeted with where he may play?
All right, I mean, look, I think, you know, Brian Banks has faced situations that probably very few, if any of us in this room have faced. And, I mean, you know, he came out of it with a really positive outlook. I think what he's done, and I know this from talking to people around the country who have dealt with him over the last while, he's such a positive influence that he has actually come out of the situation the way he has. And I think a lot of the people that deal with him, whether they're athletes on our team in time or people that he's trained with, you know, from other teams in the NFL, they're very intrigued by his story and encouraged by the way that he's approached things with an element of positivity and passion. And I think that's going to be very beneficial for this team as well.
Thomas, a couple of years ago, people talked about the colored dots, perhaps, that exist on the board, who's in, who's out, who's will never touch them.
Right.
I'm sure you've probably gone over that, but the whole concept of what is that system, if it is a system, and are there conditions at which you say we wouldn't do it here, but it's worth it perhaps over here in terms of the number of the pick? How does that actually, what kind of fluidity is there?
Yeah, that's interesting. We're very particular about our dot system here. I mean, we're particular about our locker room, as you know. We're particular about how things come together. Unfortunately, there will be situations that arise that we just can't control. I mean, we all are human. I get that. I understand that. I think the other thing that's important for everyone to realize, that whether you have a what may be a red dot from a medical standpoint or a darker dot from the standpoint of a skull and crossbones, a dot on a character issue guy, that we may be a little more understanding at those placing the dots on those cards if that player is that much better. Does that make sense? That's the reality of it. I want you guys to say, yes, that makes a lot of sense. It's a sliding scale. No, I mean, look, that's not being hypocritical about it at all. Let's just face it. I mean, there are certain positions that you're a lot more understanding, to deal with from an injury standpoint or even from a character standpoint. Let's face it. I mean, the people that are your true leaders of your football team, if you're looking at quarterbacks and or XYZ other positions, it's very important to make sure that player has what you need, the requisite traits off the field. A little less at other positions, maybe you're a little more lenient in that area. So, the dot system is something that I've been around for many, many years, and it's something that we've stayed true to, and that's important for us.
This locker room now, where you're at, where you actually have even a little more flexibility, if there's a guy that might have a character flag, that you bring him in here and you're at a position now where you're a little bit more comfortable because you think there are the right guys here.
Interestingly enough, when we kicked this off in 2008, I thought it was going to take 2 or 3 years until we were able to get to that spot to take one of the so-called a little bit more wayward soul type of player. I believe 5 years in, 6 years in now, I realize again how particular we are about our locker room, and it's incredible how a person in that locker room who has, you know, something that does not necessarily fit in with the rest of the guys and may not be the same character, the same team fit, they stand out like a sore thumb, you know, honestly, in a locker room like ours. So I think it's very, very important for us to understand that you can't just, you know, reverse ground and all of a sudden add 3, 4, or 5 of those players on this team that you know, you deem may be a little bit of a sticking point. So we're aware of it. And yet we're very proud of where we are with this group. Understanding, again, never want to say that this is, you know, we're in a totally clean environment. There are going to be issues that come up. And, you know, hopefully we can manage those, and hopefully they're not too often occurring.
Thomas, can you talk about the running back group in general? I mean, you got some big name guys, Lacy, and some smaller, faster guys like Bernard and Ellington. Last year, there were running backs throughout the whole draft that contributed, all the way to Alfred Morris in the seventh, and some of the earlier round guys. How's this group stack up?
This is a good running back group. It's a good, solid group. I don't think you're hearing a lot about running backs being picked in the top 10. Obviously, you're not hearing a lot about that, but you will definitely walk away with, you know, two or three picks in the first round that are going to be good contributing picks. Mm-hmm. The versatility of this running back group is interesting as well. I mean, as we all know, it's not just about running the rock. It's about catching the ball. It's going to be important for us. One of the reasons why, you know, it was important for us to acquire Steven Jackson here. We like his versatility and his ability to catch out of the backfield. And, again, going into this draft, you know, having Steven secured as a free agent acquisition, it allows us to be a little less focused on needing to come out of the draft with, you know, a running back.
Six division games, how much does that actually influence the GM in terms of maybe a pick in a draft, the style of play of your three opponents that you know you're going to have? Mm-hmm. Obviously, every year, those six games, is six out of 16 enough to actually get you to go one way or another for the pick?
I think it has us thinking about it, but in the end, we're just, again, this is about building for the long term. People often ask, a certain, you know, team that you're facing in a certain system, will you bring in, more, I don't know, athletic linebackers to cover or you know, certain defensive players to be able to deal with the new systems that are out there now? We also believe that they can be very cyclical in this league, and just when you start to invest time and money and focus on a certain position or style of player, you know, that system will change and you're dealing with something very different. Wildcat was rolling for a while. I think it changed. I maintain that, you know, there are some incredibly intelligent defensive coordinators and driven, competitive head coaches who are telling their defensive coordinators, figure it out and figure it out now. I think there will be a really interesting approach to how we're defending the systems that are in place and who have won. It will be really interesting to see how things change going into the next year or two.
Just following up on Chris's draft value chart question, how much of it's changed since the rookie scale came in? It's not shouldn't be as steep to go up like you all went. Has the draft value chart changed drastically here in recent years?
No, it hasn't changed drastically. What has changed, obviously, is the money involved from, you know, where it used to be tens of millions of dollars to move up significantly. It's not that way as much. Obviously, moving from 30 up to 5 is drastic as far as money, but I think you can move within the draft, you know, a handful of spots. And it's not like back in the day when, you know, that first round was very, very expensive. And you know, quite honestly, we were very fortunate a few years ago or a couple years ago when we did it that it didn't cost us anywhere near as much money as it would have cost in other years, you know, when we made the move for Julio.
And analytics, could you talk about the role of analytics in the draft? I was watching the panel from the Sloan Institute. That was more football and play calling and so forth. But you know, how much of that do you guys use for, you know, moving your boards around, getting that board right, and so forth?
Analytics is definitely the wave of the future, and I think a lot of teams are very interested in it. And I think it's just it's a supplement for making decisions, in my mind. And it's never going to be, you know, the answer. I think if you take intelligent enough people who know how to use analytics, and they don't overplay the importance of analytics, then I think it can be very beneficial. And it can be beneficial in biomechanical assessment when you're talking about evaluating players and acquiring players and how they move. It can be also from a statistical analysis. It can also be from a heart rate monitoring analysis and where people are at other times, not necessarily in the draft. It could be about making decisions on game day. So I think there's a lot out there. I think it's really good for the league that we continue to be more and more open-minded about using analytics and not just saying this is all from what I feel here. Let's take some of the scientific approach, eliminate some of the guesswork. We're not going to eliminate all of it. But I think it's important for the teams that are open to do that, and I think you're seeing more and more of it. I believe at the Sloan Conference, I believe there were 18 teams attending. So it wasn't like there were just a handful.
Yeah, they said it used to be like a couple, but this was the most 18 in the Kramer. Andrew Kramer's Kramer's
there
was
18. Yes. They're, again, very, very beneficial to use it properly. But
what,
not
more? Thomas, the schedule comes out tonight. And I didn't get any word on what the schedule may be. A lot of speculation about four prime time games, but a much more difficult schedule this year.
I'm sure it will be a challenging schedule for us, and I think we're in a spot right now where we understand they're going to be primetime games. We understand they're going to be difficult games. We know who our opponents are, obviously. That said, I believe as we were going through last year, we realized that we were no longer the team of 2008 and 2009, where we are feeling a little bit more apprehensive and nervous when we stepped on the field with the big, you know, historical teams. I think this team really believes now that they truly can, you know, strap it up against any team in this league and play. And there's not the intimidation factor that there once was, at least as long as we were here from 2008 on. And I love that feeling.
It's kind of an offbeat question. Are there more prospects out there from the Ivy League than there once were? Is that quality going up at all? Am I looking at that and seeing some more names out there?
I don't know if it necessarily has gone up. I think we think about, you know, smart football players, and that's important in at certain positions. I think interestingly enough, we've really focused on trying to find those players that can be versatile, and I think the league is becoming more and more cognizant of acquiring a player that may not be the best overall athlete and the fastest, but they perform X, Y, and Z that much better than other players, along with their intelligence. And I think that may open up the door a little bit. That said, I don't think there's a direct drive on trying to acquire Ivy League players or you know, ostensibly smarter football players from certain schools.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Make sure that's the, find another nickname.
Another